Good morning, Chair Smith and Commissioners. As the Chair said, I'm Bill Twite with the FISH program, and with me is Ryan Lothrop. Before we go into our agenda item, can I ask for just a little bit more clarification on Commissioner Carpenter's blue sheet request? I heard two avian species mentioned in that, cormorants and mergansers. I'm assuming, though, you meant the full range of avian predation.
Thank you, Bill. I did. That was in a big hurry, very rudimentary. Mm-hmm.
So we can have some more dialogue, but after that great presentation yesterday on the harbor seal predation items that Commissioner McIsaac just raised, also there's been some discussions over the last year or two about predation by, in particular, cormorants and mergansers in Puget Sound on the coast and Willow Pond and Grays Harbor. So, yeah, you and your staff know the species probably in total better than I do, but I'm just concerned about the rate of predation and what do we know about it and what can we do about it. So I wanted to get something started on that.
So it is indeed a statewide overview, focus on avian and focus on Chinook, but whatever additional information we have that has bearing.
Chair Smith has mentioned a number of times, too, that they've had similar issues back in the Great Lakes, in particular Michigan, and they were able to get some type of a permit from U.S. Fish and Wildlife to reduce the numbers on cormorants. I don't know if that's an option.
Not mergansers, it was just cormorants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But whatever options are available to help our concerns for Chinook, mm-hmm. for killer whales, et cetera, would be most helpful.
Thank you.
In an addition on to that, I mean, I have mentioned the Upper Great Lakes, but I don't know if that's been in other areas as well around the country.
So it maybe has.
Yeah, a couple other ones, because if we could base our future model in action on what is already underway, you know, that seems like an easier path to take.
One of the things that we'll cover is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's work.
That's good.
At a national level. They are in the middle of restructuring their national framework as a result of some litigation, but they're consulting with all the states about, in particular, double-crested cormorant predation,
right.
And they're very aware of the issues in the Northwest regarding salmonids.
That'd be helpful, Bill.
Commissioner Graber. Go ahead.
I believe Caspian terns are another obvious.
I did ask him, and so Commissioner broadened it to avian.
Yeah. Okay. And steelhead, you know.
Oh, those. Yes, should, sir.
Yeah.
They don't have wings.
Should be. You know, that's easy. I mean.
Well, see, that was the point I was wanting to raise. And I'm going to pose this as a question to you. If we talk about all salmonids, is that going to make it a lot heavier lift for you, or because you said unique to Chinook?
It helped to understand that the Chinook was to some extent relative to southern resident killer whale issues and the systemic issues with Chinook really coastwide. That helped to understand that, but to some extent it's very difficult to, because it's avian predation, sometimes all they can see is the fact that it's a silvery thing. We usually end up covering the range of predation on salmon.
Yeah, that would be very beneficial.
Okay. Look forward.
But we will do it with a focus on Chinook statewide, steelhead in the Columbia.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
That helps. So for today's agenda item, I think what staff is hopeful to get from you is a sense of what you need us to work on in order to support potential two-state commission working group for this year, the two-state commission subgroup for this year. So just what we need to be focusing on as staff for the next couple months in conjunction with Oregon staff to be ready to provide to, assuming you go forward with that idea, and then sort of what we'll need to have addressed in order to ensure that we can plan appropriately for 2019 fisheries. We need that guidance. And then we also, it will help our work planning if you can begin to give us some guidance about some of the other issues you may want us to be taking on in the longer term. I already heard mention of the upriver spring Chinook allocation. That's certainly one of several. Some of the others we've heard mentioned frequently that we do think we have some bandwidth to take on, or just sort of some of the larger issues that the The work products that we provided to you provided some, should have provided you with some sense of particularly the longer term plan of what kind of complexity there may be. There's clearly some complexity in Fall Chinook because there's a fair amount of lack of concurrence that has proved problematic during the first 5 years. So that's another possibility. Others that we've heard raised are the Barbara Sook regulations and whether or not they're both science-grounded and whether they're achieving, whether we can determine whether they're achieving any management objectives. Young's Bay Sanctuary has been raised is another one. So some large issues like upriver, downriver, spring Chinook, or fall Chinook allocations in general, and then some smaller issues like Barbless Hooks and Young's Bay Sanctuary. If you gave us some guidance to begin planning on working on those. I should mention that for the upriver, downriver, spring Chinook, we have been working with regional staff. They have actually provisionally formed a Southeast Washington Stakeholders Working Group, sort of pending a green light from you to begin to work on that. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife staff have already agreed to work with us on that as well. So we have that kind of lined up should you choose to have us begin to work on it. Some of these things, some of the longer-term issues, can actually begin to proceed just on our side of the river and then be folded in the future. If the commission-to-commission approach, that subgroup approach, if you adopt that, if that appears workable to you after examining the 2019, and you choose to use that for the longer term, it, at least in staff's judgment, we won't have gotten too far ahead of you if we've started work on some of those issues, because we know we're always building that work back towards a commission decision. And so it's either a commission or a two-commission decision that's it matters some, but it doesn't matter a lot to us getting started on it. So I guess what I'm trying to signal to you is that you don't have to worry about us getting too far out ahead of you on any of these issues, because we know we're always building back towards you, and that's certainly informing, say, the Southeast Washington Stakeholders Group. They understand that their role would be to help formulate information for a commission process as well. Yeah. So,
Bill, to that point, I mean, we have been working on this spring salmon issue since last summer with the meetings. And Commissioner Thornburn brought up this morning a very thoughtful letter from the Salmon Recovery Board that I forwarded to you. So I think we have a lot of information that could be presented to the commission with some options at this point, I believe. Although I'm not, as I mentioned to Ryan before you arrived, I'm not trying to push you too fast on this, because I think we need a little bit more thought and meetings with Oregon on this, and also participation from Region 1 staff who are very close to this issue. So, but we're down the road on this, and we should be able to make some decisions on that, I would think, by February or certainly by March.
So I hear Bill asking us if we would give the green light to go forward, and I would certainly like to ask if the commission is willing to do that. There has been the communication that Commissioner Grayville was referring to. This is an issue that our stakeholders feel has been on the table for a long time in terms of their concerns. So I think they're ready to go with it. And if the commission would be agreeable, I'd like to say, yeah, green light.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the end of this agenda item, I'll also be supporting doing that. I don't know if February is a conclusionary time frame that's realistic or not, But I think we may have some public testimony, and if we start to get into looking at guidance on issue by issue on the handout that we received at the Fish Committee meeting, it's quite a lengthy one, and I think maybe we ought to wait for if there is any more presentation from the staff and then public testimony, and then get into where we move from here.
Commissioner Holstein.
Thank you, Chair.
And there again, this isn't just specific to the Columbia River, but the other night, one of my state legislators called me and started ripping me a new one, and it was kind of funny. But anyway, because there was some talk about maybe expanding some capacity at Lyons Ferry Hatchery, and she was all revved up about that. And finally, I got her talked off that wagon. But anyway, with the governor talking about upping hatchery productions and stuff like that, if you could, and it doesn't need to be a big heavy lift, but just kind of keep us aware of what all's in play, because there's a lot of things changing right at the moment, and it makes it easier for us if we're a little clued into what's all at play. And
thank you. Commissioner, certainly relative to the spring Chinook in particular in Southeast Washington, it's not directly an alternative relative to allocation, but one of the dynamics that's certainly been under development is the potential for additional spring Chinook production in some of those tributaries. And so that would be very relevant to any decision you made.
Well,
so we will indeed, with a particular focus on that, but we can do that more generally as well.
Right. And there again, it plays right what I want, and you've heard me go off on this spiel that we've got to figure out ways to grow the pie instead of quit fighting over the last scrap. And so, no, I was tickled to death with it, but if we could just kind of have a heads up, this may be in play and what's going on, just so we can have a little idea.
Yes. I agree with Commissioner McIsaac that we should hear public testimony today, and then also green light a staff in preparation, knowing that we intend to meet with Oregon, and until we have that meeting and get a sense of what the central issues are that we face, I don't think we want to get too far into this list as well. We don't want to point by point review these six pages, and that would be getting ahead of ourselves. So.
Yeah. I also just want to remind Commission of a couple of the other things that are on our plate right now that are underway in response to either Commission requests or staff-level initiatives also. One of the major ones is the Upper Columbia, revisions to the Upper Columbia Fish Management Plan, and along with that is revisions to the Colville Fish Management Agreement. That's underway right now. It's a fairly major workload involving both Columbia River Management Unit and in particular the Regions 2 and 3 staff. Another is the report back to you on where we're allowing night fishing. That's well underway. You'll get a report back on that in January, but sort of the so what of that will involve some additional work. And then you obviously added one more blue sheet today. And then, of course, we're heading into North of Falcon, spring Chinook planning in North of Falcon. So we do have, we've got a lot in front of us, but there is some bandwidth now that the five-year review has a cover on it. There is some bandwidth for us to take on some of these, at least a couple of additional things. Certainly bandwidth to support you in whatever approach you take with Oregon for 2019, but also should you choose to have us go forward on a couple of the other issues that I mentioned or some others that you may hear about in public testimony that you may have, there is some amount of bandwidth there. So,
any questions?
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We do have public input, which we're looking forward to. And then Commissioner Carpenter will make a statement after that. So everybody knows the rules about this. So Ross Barkhurst and Jim Coleman, please.
Morning, Commissioners. Director, Assistant Director, Deputy Director.
Thank you.
I've fished the Columbia River. Can you hear me? I've fished the Columbia River from St. Helens down through Bowie 10 and over the bar for 45 years. I last saw my younger brother alive in a hog line off the mouth of the Klamath River. We lost him the next year, and just as pleasant a way as you could spend a day with your brother when it was his last time out there. I can tell you that's about River Mile 75. I can tell you when the nets go in below St. Helens or below the mouth of Lewis, overnight there are no fish. And when the nets come out, there are 3 days with no fish at River Mile 75. If you're farther up, it's going to be longer. And so I hope in your studies you all are not counting days with no nets as fishable days, because they're not. And you look for this a big spring back of recreational success. That may be one of things that might be being overlooked. I see in reading your presentation, it's pretty long and torturous, but I see a lot of talk about harvest. I just don't see much talk about success and escapement. Some of these Chinook are endangered. I don't know what your trend is on escapement. I suspect it's not very good. Been ESA listed for a long time. I'm not sure that we talk about poor ocean conditions. I'm not sure it's going to be okay if we meet our goals during good years and never during bad years. I'm not sure that's really the way it's supposed to work. Sport fishing can be selective. All you have to do is flick a switch and say we can't keep unclipped fish in the lower Columbia, and we don't keep them. We have about a 14% mortality rate. Non-selective gill netting cannot be selective. It's 56% mortality rate. You can't flick a switch. You have to take the nets out. And so I thought that a safe zone in the lower part of the river for the original phase-out plan was a good idea. I hope we don't back off that. These safe areas are not well named. The way I read the netting rules, you can keep every sturgeon that you catch in a safe area in a gill net. So in Willapa Bay and Grays Harbor and some bays in Oregon, we can't harvest one Chinook so that the netters in the lower river can keep every legal one. Doesn't make sense if we're trying to raise the economics of recreational fishing. There's an exclusionary outside Young's Bay. A Bowie 10 is very crowded. This makes it more crowded. I think we should eliminate that. I don't think we're intercepting that many fish. We have a history, not only in the Columbia, of over forecasting. And if you look at the spreadsheet today in front of you, is what we forecast and what we got last year. We over forecast, and then as a result, we over harvest on reality. And hope you all can figure out how to put that to a stop.
Thanks, Ross. Heath and Jim.
Good morning, Chair Smith, Director, Commissioners. Thank you for having us here today. And I didn't prepare anything today. I just came to thank you for putting together a plan to fix something that's broken. And these Columbia River reforms that we've been beating our head against the wall on for 6 years now. Oh, I need to back up. My name is Jim Coleman, and I am a commercial advisor for the last 10 years. So these Columbia River reforms were put in place 6 years ago. And over the course of those 6 years, we have determined that they're not working out very well, except for one group, and that's the sport fishing group. They got their allocation shift to them, and the gill nets got pushed off, so they're happy. But the fixing needs to come back to the commercial fishermen. They lost. There's no seine fishery. There's no select area fisheries. And so I'm here to thank you because you've recognized that, and now there's a process to fix it. The bi-state committee is a great idea. Thank you. I think there's a suggestion would be to put some commercial advisors and sport fishing advisors on that committee. as a resource, not to be directly involved in it, but as a resource to be in the room during the conversation. I think we're headed in the right direction, so anything, as an advisor, I'd put my name on the list, but there are some real fish people on that advisor board. You've seen them here testifying, so staff can get you the right names on who they'd like to be on there if you choose to put advisors on there. But thank you. I think we're moving in the right direction. It needs to be a bi-state agreement. It started out. It's been kind of a mess, but so thank you, and I look forward to getting this thing fixed and getting back to a normal process. And the commercial fishermen supply fish to the general public, and we have denied that access. So thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Any questions?
Appreciate your comments. Bryce, diving, please. And good morning, Keith.
Good morning, Chairman Smith, Commissioners. Good to see you. Well, I'm going to start with at least a positive piece of news because it's nice to have something positive to talk about. I was in D.C. on Tuesday when the House passed the Columbia River Sea Lion legislation that I personally have spent years working on. An over a decade effort to get that over the finish line, so it tells you even Congress can do something, but what it also tells you is it takes a long time to solve really sticky natural resource issues, which we are talking about one right now with Columbia River fisheries. So CCA did send you a letter yesterday with recommendations and some thoughts about what has gone on in policy implementation. I won't repeat a lot of that. You can review it for yourselves. I just would say, you know, generally this has been a really long process. We basically were here 2 years ago, January of 2017. The commission made a decision, and I feel like ever since then, the commission has essentially been reviewing this policy. For the last 6 months, there have probably been a dozen public meetings in between this commission and then also the staff that have done it on the comprehensive review, and people are worn out. So if you don't see a full room of people, that's because they don't know really what this commission's doing, and you've been given options ranging from move forward with the policy just as it is to tear it completely down and start over. And I guess I would just ask that this commission be very clear about what it's proposing to do before making any decisions so it can receive public comment on what you're actually considering doing, because right now the public really doesn't know. So as you build that into your timeline, we really would appreciate that. And then I just say, I think there's a real trust issue right now with the department. When you put something in a policy and you say do X, do a buyback, and you don't do anything for 5 years, essentially, when you say go implement selective gear and you apply one standard to that and you apply a completely different standard to gill nets, there's a serious trust problem. And I think moving forward, I think a lot of that's going to play out in the legislature, frankly, as we get over there, because that's the place I think people have to go in terms of their elected representatives on that. So appreciate all that you guys have done. This is not easy. It's not easy for anyone working on this. We would like to find a place where you can land that does the right thing for the resource, puts conservation first, and hopefully creates fishing opportunity and opportunity in communities. So I thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Heath. Yes, Commissioner Keogh.
Yeah. Thanks, Heath. Good to see you on Saturday morning.
Nice, always nice to see you on a Saturday morning.
We did receive the letter yesterday from CCA, and it was, you know, several pages long. Didn't have a time to really go through it in detail, but I did notice that there were several objections, I guess, or questions concerning the comprehensive review, some challenges or disagreements. So I guess my question would be, were those issues or challenges brought to the staffs? I mean, because there was, as you say, there were several public meetings and opportunities to weigh in on that. So were those, so the question is did you bring those issues, challenges to the department during that review process? And if so, were those rejected by the department?
I've been raising these issues. I'm kind of a broken record these days. I kind of feel like I have been raising these issues for months in multiple venues, whether it's Fish Committee meetings, whether it's in meetings with staff, whether it's in front of this commission. So I don't think there was anything new in there that hasn't been raised to both the staff in Vancouver, and I know people have raised them at the public meetings they had there in Vancouver. I have not attended a lot of those meetings, but I did attend nearly every Fish Committee meeting, either in person or over the phone, every commission meeting. So yeah, they, you know, all of those, nothing in that letter is new in terms of what was raised.
Okay.
Mr. Thornburg.
Hey.
Could you explain what you mean by different standards were applied to gill nets other alternative gear?
Sure. Yeah, if you look in the letter, and it pretty clearly defines this, what we did, and it was a long letter, I think, to
I haven't seen it yet.
Kehoe's point. Essentially, we subjected Sains to mortality rate testing, release mortality rate testing, both short-term and long-term release mortality testing. So they captured the fish. In the case of Sains, they put the tags in them to actually scan them as they went up across Bonneville. And what happened is we ended up with some flaws in that study, quite frankly, that led to huge mortality rates being assigned to Chinook and Coho in particular. And I've been raising this for 5 years. And then there's still some serious questions about the steelhead. So what we've done is we've tracked both short-term and long-term on the Sains. Here's what they did with the 2017 data that they had from the observer data. They simply marked as observers at night whether the fish was completely dead or completely alive, and then they took that to say, well, this is what the immediate mortality rate is, whereas what they did with Sains, and they've done it with tangle nets, is they had a 5-point scale, and this was a very scientific study. It was dead, it was live and thrashing, it was bleeding, I mean, all sorts of different markers there. And then what they did in 2017 with modifying the release mortality rate on gill nets, they took long-term release mortality studies for five other gear types, five other seasons, and even with other species to come up with what a guess would be on long-term mortality. I'll call it an informed guess backed by those studies, whereas they've subjected Sains to long-term mortality rate testing. So that is part of the kind of trust issue that is out there. And at a time when we were supposed to be working on a buyback, we took the data in 2017 and within months were able to put together a 30-page request to TAC to reduce that mortality rate for gill nets, but we couldn't find time to work on a buyback, for example. So if the letter will point that out a little bit more, but I think if you'd ask staff, they would tell you that there's been a different approach in terms that was used. They may say that gill nets, you know, have had more studies done on them, so we, you know, NIMS has required us to do it on Sains, but that's essentially what happened.
Thank you.
Oh. If I could, one other comment. I just wanted to mention, I wasn't at the Vancouver meeting, and I did call Commissioner Kehoe. He made a comment there about something that I think that I was allegedly said about, you know, junk science or something along those lines that was read at that meeting. And we had a good conversation. I just wanted to make it very clear that I didn't say that. What I was referring to was non-scientific data, and it was exactly this observer data that was used to then, you know, change a very scientific number through a non-scientific process. That was my comment that was made, and I think Commissioner Kehoe maybe misheard it, and we had a good conversation, but I did feel like I wasn't there in person, but I didn't exactly feel warm and loved by the comments that were made during that meeting. So just wanted to point that out. So anyhow, I appreciated your civility in talking about it over the phone.
He's a civil guy.
Yes. Civil. Keep it classy.
Okay, thanks, Heath. Darren Cruikshanks, please, and Bryce.
Thank you, Chairman Smith, Commissioners. I attended the Fish Committee meeting, and there was an analogy made to the policy along the lines of compared to an automobile, and I just thought about that in the time since. I thought that's really a good model. In my opinion, this model's never run very well. It ran for sputters and started for 4 years, and at the end of 2016, it came to a screeching halt. We had two more years of extension, but and it's kind of like standing around a car with the hood up and something wrong with it. What's wrong is in the staff report. It shows quite a bit more than minor adjustments. It looks like the timing belt might be off, a couple of flat tires. It's more in need of a tow truck, I think, than a adjustment. And I would hope that in the future you'd consider that maybe we should go back. We may need a new automobile. Maybe we should go back to temporarily to a tried and true, the one we had before, the youth model, until we can develop something that will carry all our fisheries forward into the future. I hope you move in that direction. And secondly, I'd like to talk a little bit about buyback, since I've attended the meetings on that. And where we're really at in buyback is, are we going to have a fishery? I mean, how do we know if we want to have a buyback when the policy's obviously not fulfilled its obligations? We don't know what there is to go forward with. And is the idea to buy out all the fishery? To have no commercial fishery left, buy all licenses and put and do away with them? It's really, until we get the policy ironed out, we get something that's workable going into the future, I don't see how we can move forward on a buyback. It's a big choice to make. And I'd hope you would consider that. So thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Bryce. And Kent and Darren.
Thank you, Chairman Smith. My name is Darren Cruikshanks. I'm the president of the Columbia River Fishermen's Protective Union. I'm also the guy that's been doing all the studies on all the different types of alternative gears. And I'd just like to say that I'm in favor of some real serious policy changes here. This policy has let us down in numerous ways. It's put a huge financial burden on a lot of us. I personally, myself, have invested hundreds and thousands of dollars buying a seine boat, buying a skiff, a seines, and trying to further my career that I've done my whole entire life. And so far, that boat is sitting, not making me no money, along with my other two gillnet boats. So I don't know where we're going with this, but we 80-20 is not cutting it, and we need to make some serious changes, and I hope you guys will consider that. And these safe areas, they put Spring Chinook salmon in Cathlamet Channel. I'm still to this day testing that. And we've caught, well over 1,000 fish in there, and not one of them have been one of those net pen release salmon that they planted in there. They're all other species, so that has failed. Young's Bay, Deep River, you go back and look at the Spring Chinook landings in there, it's supplementing about 49 people that live around the area. The whole Middle River where I live, Longview, Cathlamet, Rainier, all them areas have been left out in the cold. I used to employ up to 9 people to help me buy fish. I haven't bought one fish on my dock in about 2 or 3 years now. I mean, I don't know if you see it, but this policy has inflicted some pain on a lot of people, just not myself. So, anyways, I am in favor of some hatchery production, and when we do this, we need to have a way to catch these fish. So I don't know where we're going, but I hope you guys will take that into consideration. And I'm here to tell you, too, that I can outfish my seine boat any day of the week with my gillnet boat. It takes one person to run it. The expenses are way less, and you can't scratch fish with a seine boat. A seine boat has to be right on top of the main bulk of the run. A gillnet, time area, and gear, we can selectively take fish out of the river system. So just think about that when you get together in your committees. And thank you for your time, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Darren. You too. Liz?
Good morning.
And Kent.
Yeah. Kent Martin, commercial fisherman. I hope you were listening. This is one of the guys that dumped a bunch of money into this alternative gear, and so far hasn't seen a lot except harassment from sportsmen. being turned into the Coast Guard for bogus oil spills and all sorts of things, because the real issue is not selectivity. The real issue is we want all the fish. I guess I keep hearing that we just need to buy you guys out, but what are you going to replace us with? Is you going to put the state in the fish business and trap off every creek, I suppose, and spend enormous amounts of money that way? Does anyone really believe we can dramatically increase production with the huge surpluses we already have without cleaning up those fish with a commercial fishery? That's some of the issues that you need to deal with. If you want this, I keep saying this, if you want some of these positions, situation to be solved, you need to put out there in a given year, given run sizes, what you're expecting back, and say, okay, we probably are, after the sport fishery, we're probably going to have the bulk of 100,000 fish, 50, 20, whatever. Figure out a way to catch them within a certain impact level. That's never happened. It's always been, let's try these quick fix silver bullet things. And I keep hearing about the flaws in that mortality study. My God, I've had observers aboard my boat for so long that I have a coffee cup that says OBGYN on it. And when the observer comes aboard, I say, you want to drink coffee on my boat, you drink it out of this. I feel that violated, that abused by it, especially since every time we hear that, we basically hear the other side say, well, we don't believe that. That's not true. And I would remind you, the last hooking and handling mortality study in the recreational fishery was done in the Willamette 25 years ago in 43-degree water. There's been nothing done in the fall. It's all been tack-on guesstimates. We have a confidence issue, too. I think gill nets are a part of the solution. I think there's probably going to have to be some other things, but unless you solve this big surplus issue and make it economic, most of these fish productions are going to go away. And the winners are going to be the industrial community, who really would like to get out from under paying those pesky spending mitigation obligations. Thank you.
Thanks, Kent. And Dr. Estella, please, and Liz.
Good morning, Chair Smith, Commissioners. Here we are again. I don't even know where to start. I think the big issues, the big management issues that we're facing right now are not due to lack of concurrence. The big management issues are the state of the stocks. I don't recall seeing anything that was a problem in managing fisheries that had to do with concurrence. These fish are in a bad spot. I just sent you the run forecast that our industry got in a meeting with the Joint States last week. And you look at spring Chinook, and they're 50% of a 10-year average. You look at Upper Columbia Chinook, and they're 22% of a 10-year average. You look at sockeye, 200, Snake River sockeye coming back. Up River Steelhead last year, 33% of the 10-year average. Things are bad. The fish are in bad shape. Then you go to page 4, and you look what's going on in the safe area. And many of you will remember the map we handed out a few meetings ago that showed that the harvest for the spring and summer seasons in the safe area are greater than 140 miles of sport fishing on the same species at the same time. And guess what? Those runs are predicted to be normal. So 3 years in a row, as a matter of fact, now we're going to have a summer season in the safe areas just because of the abundance of fish going back there. So I think the optics of this discussion to the public, I mean, Heath mentioned trust, but looking at ways to expand a non-selective industrial fishery at a time when the fish runs are in a collapse, our industry looks at you and says, why aren't you talking about disaster relief for us? When we sat down and had this meeting, there's only going to be one fishery this year in the Columbia that will keep doors open, and that's Coho in the fall. And that's pretty much it. It sucks next year. I got people sitting in front of bankers, and they don't know whether they're going to get the loans based on this information to be able to make payroll for the year. So this is really, really problematic. And the thing is that we've been sitting, I mean, you said another joint state process, and I almost shot myself because I've been doing this since 2006, joint state processes, time and time and time and time and time. We keep coming to the same place. The rest of the world has figured this out. It's not a mystery, okay? This is not some big complicated problem. The entire rest of the world has figured it out. I know we can do it here. We're smart people. We can keep commercial harvest in place and do it smarter and do it better. Anyway, I want to concur with what Heath said about you. Please give us something to testify about this package that came out, which was the soup to nuts bowl. Made it difficult for those of us who want to prepare comments to have something constructive to say. So as you just lay out what you want to do and what decisions you want to make, please make it very specific so that we can comment for you.
Thanks, Liz.
Thank you.
And Francis, you're the last one for this part.
Good morning, Commissioners, Director. I've been attending meetings in this room for 17 years. I think I've made every one that's pertinent to Grays Harbor, Willapa Bay, and Columbia River Salmon. During that 17 years, it was 12 years in the making to write this Columbia River policy. And now we're 5 years into the implementation. But many, many facets of this policy are still not implemented. I mean, this is just classic heel dragging. Adaptive. My gosh, when I went to school, adaptive meant adapt. You know, we've turned adaptive and bastardized that meaning into an excuse not to adapt. I'll have to agree with Liz and Heath. This hodgepodge of stuff you're being presented in terms of what your options are, I mean, it boils down to four options. Option one, push forward. Option two, do nothing. No, option three, follow Oregon. And option four, scrap the whole thing and start all over again. You know, in the art of the deal, you throw out the top and the bottom. What are we left with? Do nothing and follow Oregon? We got to grow a spine. We're going to fish, we're going to cut bait. The timing for the policy is unfortunate. Okay, this policy came to be in 2014. We were at the height of modern day Chinook runs. Record runs, 14, 15, 16. Actually, I might have that back. I'm off. 13, 14, and 15. But boy, everybody was riding high in 14. We had more sand. We had over a million herbs coming back to the Columbia. We had over a million coho. Everybody was happy. But that ocean in 14 had already turned. And no one could imagine what kind of damage that was going to do. We had the worst ocean conditions in three decades out there between 2014 and 2018. The PDO was salmon hostile for over 2 years straight before it started to turn the corner, and we're still not out of it. The blob is back. We got the son of the blob. I just posted an article where somebody had just said that we're back toward that salmon hostel. It's turned the corner back the way we don't want. You can't judge the success of this policy based on the catches and the value. Everybody suffered because the ocean made us suffer. These run sizes were down. Nobody can catch fish that aren't there. So these values, economic values, X vessel catches, they're going to go down. Everybody suffered. Recreation suffered too. The plan was to have a recreational priority for main stem Columbia fish, and we would expect that number to go up. Well, it was up for 14, but it's been in a steady downhill turn ever since. And you can't fix what Mother Nature deals you, but you can stand on principle. There are a lot of good principles that went into this policy. Let's just get it done. Push forward.
Thank you.
Push forward. Thank you.
And that brings to closure public input for item number 15. We will not take a break. We will move into item number 16, Lower Columbia River Sturgeon Management Policy. Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just reading and I wasn't thinking. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You put me out there on the end of a stick. I just forgot about it. But this Columbia River policy has created a lot of angst, and we're not very popular, regardless of what door we look behind. But we still have to try and engage and fix issues and be part of the solution. For myself, I don't like to be part of picking winners or losers. I want everybody to be a winner whenever we can. But anyway, let's go back a minute till November the 3rd, where we met with the Oregon Commission for the day, and we had some dialogue with them, talked quite a bit about some basics, what we should do in the future. After a lengthy a quiet period, we heard back from them earlier this week from their director via their chair that they want to have some open discussion with us, and they had recommended, or their proposal is for them to put up three commissioners and Washington do the same. So we've decided to do that, to start the dialogue. They're going to be called a work group, just like it was 6 years ago, so we don't have another thing that's called a committee, so we've got enough committees. It's a work group. This work group, made up of three individuals, will engage, look at the issues, look for solutions, pathways forward. They cannot make policy. The group of three from Washington will have to come back to this commission and share their views and perhaps ultimately their recommendations. And that's how we're going to start. So after some discussions with our chair, the three commissioners that are going to take this on are Commissioner Graybill, Commissioner McIsaac, and Commissioner Kehoe. And this process will then evolve into an open public process. There's going to be no secrets. We're going to look for solutions, and hopefully we can keep everybody on board in some fashion.
Yes, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few comments, first of all, on communicating what the Vice Chairman just mentioned to the State of Oregon. A few comments on the process that was alluded to, and the staff has asked for a few comments on substance. So let me try to read from these notes, and I'll be glad to provide a copy to Joe and Tammy at some point. So first of all, I think it's important that we immediately contact Oregon and let them know that of this decision, that we do have three commissioners, and we do want to engage in the joint state process. I think that it would be good to do that on Monday. We've had some delays since November as to the communications here, so I think it's important. I think that we should ask them to designate specific staff as a point of contact, and that we need to designate specific staff as a point of contact, because we're going to rely heavily on staff in both states to try to move this forward. I think we heard from Mr. Lothrop that there's a joint meeting with Oregon staff on Monday, so it might not even be too early for them to hear about it at a staff-to-staff level that way. But I think a designated staff person who's prioritized to take this on is necessary. I think we need to coordinate for our first meeting of this joint state group reasonably soon. We have a meeting in the middle of January, as does the full Oregon Commission. It'd be nice if this group could meet before then, but if not, certainly during the month of January. We also need to let them know in their communication they were silent about the long term, and I think we should, in our letter to them, indicate that we would like to deal with the long term and not just the immediate 2019 matters of concurrency prior to the North of Falcon thing, and I'll volunteer to help in that letter if necessary. With regard to process, the Vice Chairman spoke a little bit to this. I think it's important for everybody to understand these will be open meetings, open to the public, open to commissioners from either state who are not members of the committee. I think it's a good idea to have appointed advisors and experts be there, but it might be something that the Joint State Committee ought to select who those folks are. I don't know that people ought to expect that there be a public comment period during these committee meetings. I think probably not to expect that, but with some expertise from those experts, that would be a good thing. We need to ask the staff to take a look at these draft dates over the course of January and February and early March so that there can be a full commission-to-commission joint meeting after March 16th so that whatever the concurrency that can be achieved in 2019 is achieved in a timely manner to the North of Falcon process. And this is particularly important for Fall Chinook. So I think we have a meeting on March 2nd in Spokane. And I think the Oregon Commission has a meeting on March 15th. And if those commissions independently can consider any recommendations that come from this joint state committee, they'd be prepared for a commission-to-commission meeting. And I think they were receptive to this when we talked to them about it in November. With regard to substance, first of all, I think in terms of this would be direction to the staff and proposed direction to the committee, that the committee ought to be the ones to try to appoint any advisors. And in terms of what the staff might bring to the first meeting, I think the schedule and process questions, when are these meetings to be held, where are they to be held, and all of those procedural things need to be an initial thing that the committee would have to deal with. I think it'd be very useful for the staff to bring some decision-enabling information to the first meeting. At the Fish Committee, recall, we got a handout that was just 2 pages long that dealt with matters of immediate concurrency, and that if there was a little analysis from the staff on each one of these policy elements so that the kind of decision-making that needs to take place could be done, that would be helpful. I'll use a couple of examples here. One of the policy elements is the allowable fishing gear for Fall Chinook. And we saw from our handout, this has a high potential for conflict with regard to Oregon allowing gillnets in zones 4 and 5 and the current Washington policy not. So some information on the pros and cons of that. What would happen if the Washington policy was followed? What would happen if the Oregon policy was followed? What are some possible other possibilities that the staff might bring up so that that could facilitate the discussion? The sheet also has barbless hooks as a requirement or a voluntary measure, and the Young's Bay Sport Fishing Sanctuary, which came up in testimony today and came up in November as well. And I continue to hear great concern from the private anglers and the guides, much negative dialogue about barbless hooks. And that it was pointed out in the analysis that there was not scientific information brought to the table when that requirement was put forward. There are claims that it was a punitive thing to the sport fishery. And people continue to bring up things like in the spring Chinook fishery when 80% of the catch is to be retained, that is hatchery fish, that's not a barbless hook thing straight away. And in the fall, it's not even a selective fishery. Everything that you catch is. So.
These will be issues that we will address. I don't think now is the time to do it.
I'm not trying to address them. The staff is looking for direction as to what to come to the meeting.
We have, I agree.
If I can finish this.
Okay.
The matter of the Youngs Bay thing was on our sheet. I would suggest they bring the similar kind of pros and cons to that.
Thank you.
The staff also asked for some can we get started ideas. One of those was brought up at the front table here earlier that I would support, and that is this sport fishery allocation from the lower river to the upriver. That's something I think that the staff should get started on. We've got letters from the counties. We've got letter from upriver organizations. Been a request to engage Region 1. There's impacts to the lower river fishery on this that need to be analyzed, and the upriver fishery, economic impacts, season lengths, all of that needs to be analyzed.
Maybe Commissioner McCarthy, if you could brief Mr. Toy about some of this. We have other commissioners who wish to comment, too.
I'd be glad to do that, Mr. Chairman. I just would not like later to hear that there are any commissioners that are opposed to such things as including some socioeconomic impacts. And trying to give the staff is looking for some guidance here on how to move forward, and that's what I'm speaking to.
Hey, Commissioner Carpenter.
A lot of information to absorb. Two things that I'd want to say. Well, this group of three folks, I have a lot of faith in these folks, these three individuals. They will be reporting back to the full commission whenever we're in session or on a conference call as needed, so we're all kept up to speed on the same page. And I'm going to pass it to you in just a second, David. I think it was 2 months ago, maybe somebody can refresh my memory, when we were having this discussion, I had asked and suggested that we get some real-time economic value information back on both the commercial and the recreational fishery. I don't know where that stands right now, but I want to know pretty soon, because that's a big part of this analysis that we're doing. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, thank you. In the past meetings, joint meetings with Oregon, I was part of the last one, and the one prior Larry could speak to. These were not open meetings. These were meetings with staff and commission representatives. I'm not opposed to open meetings. I would like to know what Oregon's preference is on that before we impose what we assume would be their preference. And a joint meeting, another joint meeting in March, I'm not sure what that purpose would serve. Our committees will report to our separate commissions. There will probably be votes prior to that. And we had a difficulty getting the first meeting put together. That's one of the things I'm worried about. But go ahead.
Hey, let me just inject, because I'm the only person alive that I think was on the work group in the past, is that those meetings that were made up of groups of three from each state and advisors were not open meetings. Those were closed meetings. There were open meetings of bigger groups, but generally speaking, as the work group met directly with Oregon, those were not up in open meetings. I don't expect Oregon to want to do it any other way, because you just can't get your work done as you need to. So I'll leave that open for other people to comment on. And I'm not certain, Don, Commissioner McIsaac, that Oregon has requested advisors. So I think that's an open question. I didn't see it in the letter, and they may not. So.
You know, we haven't had communication with Oregon yet about scheduling, format, you know, who's going to be represented. So as a courtesy to them, I think we need to reach out and figure out those things. So.
Okay.
Just on the matter of public meetings, there was a little bit of discussion about that in November, and I think the Oregon folks had some concern about their three commissioners and public access. However, I do think it has to be a joint state concurrence on that. I knew that was a criticism of the process last time. It was not pointed out as a positive, but it was pointed out from a public interface matter that was a negative. However, I would agree it has to be jointly concurred with Oregon as to what the process is.
Yeah, I think the word jointly concurred or words are the appropriate ones right now. So I think we don't want to get too far ahead without consulting Oregon. So that'll be next. And Bill, you got some stuff to work with there. And thank you. All right.